pastoral counseling studies, a master's in clinical psychology, and a doctorate in chiropractic healthcare. He has over 35 years' experience and training in hospitals, mental health centers, pastoring counseling settings, and holistic private practice. Dr. Dwayne Dyer, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, Deepak Chopra, among others, have endorsed Dr. Pitstick's first book, Radiant Wellness. Dr. Mark hosted Solutions, which is a nationally syndicated radio show about soul issues and practical spirituality. He's also the executive producer of Soul Proof, a documentary film. Dr. Mark has founded the Radiant Wellness Centers and utilizes advanced holistic health approaches. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mark. How are you today?
Thank you, Bill. I'm great.
Well, it's glad to have you here. It is Ethereal Thursday. We've been talking about heaven, and now we're going to talk about the soul, which is your area of expertise. And the thing that I liked about your book, Soul Proof, the message in your book is that every human being is soul proof. Our enduring self, our enduring consciousness, our enduring spirit doesn't die and cannot be hurt, or ultimately we cannot fail. How is that true?
Well, that's one of the many ramifications, Bill, that come from truly understanding that we are spiritual beings. And at the onset, I'll say that I'll use different terms synonymously: soul, spirit, consciousness, awareness, beings of energy. So when we really get that, when we understand that that's the way the universe is set up, that our energy, spirit, whatever you want to call it, does not die, cannot be killed, then we're free to live life fully. How can you kill energy?
All right. I mean, that sounds very encouraging, but let's go back in history. I mean, most of us, you know, if you look back through history, most of history is pretty rancid. And you look at the slaves in Egypt, you know, they had it pretty tough. And of course, they all died. So how does your theory of the soul, you know, transcribe to slaves in Egypt, to serfs in Europe, or wherever it may be, where people had a very harsh existence?
Well, I'm not denying that life on Earth is tough. I see it every day in my practice. I work with about 50 people a day. I've been, as you mentioned, working with people in all kinds of settings for 35 years, so I'm well aware of the breadth and depth of human suffering. So yes, there's physical death, bodily death. Yes, there's temporary suffering and challenges here on Earth. But we need to remember the big view and see the big view. See, time isn't really real. And this lifetime, even if a person lives to 90 years of age, is but a blink of an eye in the span of eternity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, I would agree with you. Time is a human construct. There's no question about that. But tell me, you claim that living and both living and dying is totally safe and both have a purpose. So explain that or expand on that a little bit for us, please.
Sure. That's the good news that sets us free. That's what Jesus and other great teachers are trying to teach. And it is a little hard to see at first because a person has to see through the fear. But again, when a person really knows that their real self doesn't die, that they continue on past physical death, then they realize their true self doesn't die. And that's why, for example, Eastern religions and yoga and so on work on helping a person identify with their inner self, their soul, their inner being, versus this outer body. This shell, this outer body, is kind of like a coat. For example, do you remember the coat you wore when you were 5 years old?
Vaguely, yes.
Yeah. You wear it anymore these days?
No, I've outgrown it.
Sure. And it's the same way with this human body. We wear it for a while. We need it for a while. It's a useful tool or vehicle that gets us from womb to tomb. But then when we move to the next page of eternity, then we don't need it anymore. So that's what I'm trying to help people is to take a larger view of this. Sure, enjoy this earthly incarnation, enjoy this body, but don't be overly identified with it and realize it's just a small fragment of who you really are.
Okay. Now, our previous guest was Lisa Miller. She wrote the book Heaven, and one of the views of heaven, particularly in Christianity, is this whole idea of resurrection. At some point in history, we will be resurrected and our souls we'll be reunited with our bodies, and we'll all be 25 years old. We'll all have rippling abs, all had a full head of hair, be charming, witty, all of those kinds of things once the reincarnation happens. Talk to me, expand on our ideas of heaven and how they fit into your ideas about the soul being soulproof.
Well, first of all, they're not my ideas. This is information I've gathered for 35 years of searching, so this is what I'm presenting is the composite picture from all the research, all the evidence out there.
Okay.
So I know there are lots of different religious views about what happens, and I respect them, and I don't want to step on anyone's toes. However, what the research indicates is that there is it's a seamless transition from this birth to the next realm. And having said that, there is a variety of experiences a person will have. And so I use the two people at the end of the spectrum for most. One is Adolf Hitler, the other Mother Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start with Mother Teresa, very spiritually enlightened person, served others, walked with God and Christ moment to moment. So when she passed on, likely it was like walking from one room into another. And just like, hey, gang, here I am. And they're saying, hey, Terry, yeah, we need your help over here.
Hey, Terry.
Yeah, because she lived a very spiritually enlightened life.
Mm-hmm.
Take, on the other hand, someone like Hitler, who lived a heinous life, that person would probably have to sleep for a long time because he couldn't face the effects of what he did. From the Aramaic, which is the language that Jesus spoke,
right.
The word heaven and hell meant how you feel when you die and you have your life review, which is, by the way, what tens and tens of thousands of people who have had near-death experiences describe.
Hmm.
They have this life review where they see their life and fast forward. He couldn't have handled his. It would have disintegrated everything he was. So there's a person that has to sleep for a long time, then go through a period of isolation, go through a temporary hell, which could be for millennia, but not for eternity. So I think that's why there have been different views crop over time, because it's not simple. It really depends on where the person's state of consciousness is at the time of passing.
All right, so death and even life itself is a very individualistic thing that you've found based on your research. Now, let me ask you this. So the biggest thing that people have to get over is this fear. I mean, I'll tell you right up front, the Billy the Brain is one who fears the death process, and I'm not looking forward to it at all. So how do you help people to get over this fear and to understand and to just try to put it behind them?
That's a great question, by the way. I wish more people would ask it. There are several ways. First of all, meditation. That's a well-proven approach in every culture throughout time, throughout the millennia, for getting in touch with our non-physical as well as our physical self, getting in touch with that part of us that you can't see, touch, hear, and so on. And then after a while, you get to know that part, you get comfortable with that part, and you realize that what we can sense with our five senses is only a couple percent of reality.
Mm-hmm.
The next way is to study, spend some time with spiritual study. For example, my book, Soul Proof, or the documentary, and all available on my website, soulproof.com. So there's all this evidence. I've read hundreds and hundreds of books, gone to all these seminars, all this training and so on, right there in a few hours read. So spiritual study. The next is spiritual fellowship, getting together with like-minded people, whether that's worship, ritual, whatever the form of that is, but getting together with people, kindred spirits, and reminding each other, having some people to lean on through this tough experience. And I would say the fourth thing I would recommend is time in nature. Nature shouts everything I'm talking about here, but it's important for a person to get where there's more energy, chi, by the beach, in the mountains, in the woods, and then just be quiet and just look at the beauty and the organization of life and realize that it is safe. It's okay.
We're talking to Dr. Mark Pitstick, everybody, author of the book Soul Proof, also producer of the documentary Soul Proof as well. And you've done a lot of research, as I said at the outset, on this, and you've kind of broken down the categories of evidence into nine categories. I'm just going to reel through them, and I'm going to ask you to comment on just a couple of them. The nine categories are after-death contacts, near-death experiences, miraculous encounters, scientific input, paranormal evidence, enlightened religion and spirituality teachings, perinatal experiences, reincarnation, and inner knowing. So you've examined all of these in your research, but I want to start with the near-death experiences. A lot of people are familiar, might even know somebody who's had a near-death experience where they've gone into the light and so forth. Describe what you've learned by studying near-death experiences.
First of all, that they are one of the most accurate glimpses of what happens after we die. Again, having been reported across time in various cultures independently, in other words, in Tibet, in the Incan and Mayan cultures, thousands of years ago, these were researched then, and they look at the reports of these, and they're all describing the same thing. So this is how I know that we're knocking on the door of truth as much as we can with our limited human understanding. So this is then a snapshot of what we can expect. Secondly, the near-death experiences, NDEs for short, provide the most irrefutable evidence that consciousness does continue, because there have been so many tens of thousands of documented cases of people who, while they were clinically dead, their eyes are closed, they're being resuscitated, they're in an ICU or emergency room, and I worked on hundreds and hundreds of people like this during my work in hospitals. Their consciousness or their awareness drifts out of the hospital, hovers around, sees events happening in the room where they are, things on top of the hospital, car wrecks happening outside the hospital, and upon successful resuscitation, accurately describe these events. There is no way they could have seen those and seen those accurately without a continuation of consciousness that exists beyond the body, what's called non-localized consciousness.
Outside of body experiences. All right, well, let me ask you this. In all of the research that you did, were there any stories that just, in the near-death experience category, that just made the hairs on your arms stand up?
Well, the first one, I was blessed to have been around my Uncle Cliff when I was 9 years old. And I remember my parents telling me, your Uncle Cliff was in a bad rap. He almost died. We don't know if he's going to make it. He and another fellow were driving in Indiana and hit head-on with a semi.
Wow.
The other fellow did die, and Uncle Cliff was in the hospital for months. Our families were very close. Well, finally, he came home. We got to see him. He was in a hospital bed. His jaw was wired shut. He had about 10 broken bones. But what he was talking about through his clenched jaw excitedly, and I'm there with my parents listening in fascination, is what a wonderful experience it was after the wreck. He heard the most beautiful music. See, I'm getting teared up thinking about it.
Yeah, it sounds it.
He heard the most beautiful music he'd ever heard. He saw green grass. He said he felt so peaceful. He encountered Jesus. And he said if it weren't for his family, his children were young at that time, he would have easily stayed and not come back. And he knew it was real without a doubt. when the patrolman came to the site of the wreck and were pulling him out of the car, he started to come back to consciousness, and he said, don't turn off that music, don't turn off the music. And they said, you know, there's nothing on, there's no music on, the radio is broken.
Right, right. Interesting. Well, I'll give you a minute to regain your composure as you tell that story. It's a very moving story. But my question for you is this. You know, we all have the vision, whether it's from the movies or books that we've read, like The Lovely Bones, that we all go into the light. Is that a common experience for near-death experiences, that there's a light, we all start to walk towards it, and then those who are resuscitated turn away from the light and come back to the living? Is that a fairly common experience?
Yes, the light's always there. The light is all there is. In other words, talk to a quantum physicist, and they'll say that reality is on a cusp, kind of like the peak of a wave, between formed and formless, or between particles and light. And so love and light are one way of describing what is going on, or a dance of energy, even though it appears solid to us. So the light is all around. So yes, the light is always there when a person passes on, to help, to instruct, to heal and embrace. Now, some people naturally go in toward the light, and if it's their time, they move on then. Others are told by the light, it's not your time. Even though they want to stay, they need to come back. And then others who are very angry, perhaps were killed in a violent way, people who have addictions and so on, they're not in touch with the light, or they don't want to go into the light because they don't believe in it, they're afraid of it, they can't relate to it. And then that, those are the people who are kind of in limbo for a while, like ghosts, until they realize there's a better opportunity for them.
Well, and ghosts are part of your paranormal evidence, one of the 9 categories of evidence that you have that the soul exists. We're talking to Dr. Mark Pitstick, everybody, author of the book Soul Proof. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, 639-0008. We've got to stop, Mark, for just a brief break here. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about some of the other examples of proof that you have. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back.
And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Billy the Brain. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. And our theme today is Ethereal Thursday. We are having 2 guests that have definitive proof, not only of the afterlife, but also of heaven as well. My current guest is Dr. Mark Pitstick. He is the author of the book Soul Proof, has dedicated his life to doing research on the existence of the soul, has categorized his research into 9 different categories. And before we went to the break, we were talking about the near-death experiences, because many people either have had one themselves or know someone that has had a near-death experience and their vision of what the afterlife is going to be. Before we went to break, Mark, you were talking about people that were trapped on a plane between this world and the other, and they hung around sort of as ghosts. One of the other categories of your evidence is paranormal evidence, so let's talk about that. What did you discover in doing your research about paranormal evidence that leads you to believe that the soul exists?
Well, first of all, the word paranormal, the more and more I work with this, becomes nonsensical, because if so many people, and it's true, so many people do have these experiences, then it's not really paranormal, it's normal. In the past, most people didn't share their experiences, whether after-death contacts or ghost sightings or whatever, for fear of being considered kooky, but now people are opening up, and we find out almost everyone has had one or more of these experiences.
All right. Well, I can say that I haven't, so let's talk about some of the ones that you've researched, because I think that would be fascinating.
Well, first of all, a lot of people don't know that university studies have been done, for example, at Cambridge University, at UCLA in California, and about ghosts. And so these are professors who set up strictly controlled studies with motion tripping detectors, cameras, totally blackened areas, and they have lights coming and going on footage, and there's no other explanation for it at all. So there's some good research out there for ghosts, in addition to all the different experiences that many people have had.
Mm-hmm. But some of that has been refuted as well. There are people who bust the myths about these people that go out and actually are charlatans finding ghosts and so forth. So how do you separate the wheat from the chaff? I mean, we've got television shows, Ghost Hunters, and some of these other reality shows that are out there tracking ghosts. But how do you know that that's truly for real?
And I don't deny that there's chaff amongst the wheat, and that's why I look at all of the experiences together, all the documentation. But when I have investigators from UCLA, Cambridge University, as I say, photos were shown in the popular photography, and they only accept documented cases. So even if there's one case that is true among all the millions, that's enough to show that something else does exist.
All right, fair enough. I will buy that. We're talking to Dr. Mark Pitstick, everybody, author of the book Soul Proof. He's broken down his evidence into 9 categories: after-death contacts, near-death experience, miraculous encounters, scientific input, paranormal activity, which we were just talking about, enlightened religious and spirituality teachings, and one that I'm fascinated with is perinatal experiences. First of all, describe for my listeners what perinatal means and what the experiences are, and why this evidence is some of the most compelling.
Natal referring to birth, like postnatal, people are familiar with that term. So para meaning around the time of birth. So this can happen before, during, and after the time of birth. What has become increasingly apparent is that many little children have experiences They typically report these around age 3 or 4 or 5, when they can talk, but usually before they become too indoctrinated. They go to school and now your name is Susie and you're an earthling. So these children report spontaneously and also under hypnosis is awareness from the womb. For example, one little girl, and there are top researchers, David Chamberlain, PhD, David Cheek, MD, Stan Groff, MD. So these are trusted doctors doing this research. So one little girl, for example, named Loretta, when she was about 4 years old and told her mom, "I remember when I was in your belly and you and Dad were on a boat and you didn't feel good and Daddy said to watch this lighthouse or building," she said, "so you felt better because you were worried about me." And the mother was aghast because she knew without a doubt she had never told her daughter that. Why would she? But the facts were correct. When she was about 6 months pregnant, she and her husband said, "You know, we're going to have not much more time. Let's take a little trip." She indeed got seasick. She was watching a lighthouse to try to keep from vomiting, and they were concerned about the safety of the child. And this is just one of many documented cases where children accurately describe what happened while they were in the womb or at the time of their birth, again, indicating that this consciousness we've been talking about not only survives physical death, but precedes physical birth.
Interesting, very interesting. Now, the perinatal experiences are the ones that I think are the most fascinating because these children have no axe to grind. There's no history there. They've not been exposed to the basic concepts of heaven, hell, afterlife, pre-life, all of that kind of stuff. What other examples do you have in the perinatal category?
One little boy told his mother, "I remember when I was born," said, "something pinched my cheek, something was sticking me in my head, and something was tied around my neck." And again, the mother was shocked because why would she tell details, kind of scary details, of his birth to him, this little child? But indeed, all of that was true. He was born with the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck. He had to be delivered with forceps, which were pinching his cheek. And he had to have a fetal monitor put in his scalp before he was delivered. And again, there is the book I recommend for that is Babies Remember Birth by David Chamberlain, PhD. But there are a number of books out there, and this is all annotated in my book, Soul Proof.
We're talking to Dr. Mark Pitstick, everybody. As he said, he is the author of the book Soul Proof, has spent over 30 years researching evidence and putting it into categories of evidence that the soul does exist. And one of the great influences on your work, on your life, in fact, is Dr. Gary Swartz, PhD. He's a former professor at Harvard and Yale. He's currently working at the University of Arizona. How important was he to your scientific work? What influence did he have? And how did you get to know Dr. Swartz?
Well, first of all, I don't know him personally, but I followed his work closely. And he's one of just many giants in the field having the courage to step out academically. As you say, he has impeccable scientific credentials, having presented hundreds and hundreds of scientific papers, Yale, Harvard. So the guy is solid academics. But he went out on a limb and started researching using scientific method the question, can psychic mediums indeed communicate accurately, truly, with disembodied spirits? And so he assembled who he had heard were supposed to be valid psychic mediums, people like George Anderson, James Van Praagh, John Edward, and others. Totally strict scientific controls. He had magicians, other scientists observe every aspect of the research to see if there are any flaws in the design, if anyone could see any inconsistencies, and they couldn't. Double-blind studies. He had the psychic mediums and had a control group. It was a totally blind study in that the mediums and the subjects were in different rooms, and there's no way for the mediums to see the subjects or even know if they were male, female, young, or old. So with this setup, the control group had a 23% what they call hit rate or success rate, much like you and I would get probably. Mm-hmm. You know, your mother's dead. No, she's alive. She had brown hair. No, it was blonde.
Just something more than just slightly above random. Okay.
The psychic mediums had an 86% success rate when they ran the statistical probability of this. And by the way, to be published in peer-reviewed scientific journals takes a probability of 1 out of 1,000 that the results are random. He had 1 in 1 trillion.
So the research was almost irrefutable.
It's out of sight research-wise. So,
yeah.
And he continues this and talks about it in his book, The Afterlife Experiments.
We're talking to Dr. Mark Pitstick, everybody. He's the author of the book Soul Proof. He's put his proof into 9 different categories of evidence, and he has built an argument that shows that there may be, in fact, definite proof that the soul exists. Mark, we're out of time, but where can listeners go to learn more about you, your book, and the work that you've done?
My Soul Proof, my website is soulproof.com. Lots and lots of free articles. That's where they can access the book and the DVD, the documentary. Ask people to examine this information, decipher themselves, and share it with others. Lord knows the world needs this sort of information to help us get through day to day.
Very good. Mark, it's been a pleasure, as always. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bill.
No, my pleasure. Thanks. A big shout-out to all of our listeners around the United States. Remember, our statistics show that we've got listeners in 37 states and the District of Columbia. Thank you very much for making Brainstorming with